This is CRNH on KXL. I am Chris Ryan. Appreciate you joining us for the show. This hour of the program is presented by Riverbend Community Mental Health, as well as the Prescription Center. And this segment of the program brought to you by Suncook Dental. Dr. Andrew Albee and his team are phenomenal. They're focused on your comfort and care as a patient. I encourage you to check out Suncook Dental at suncookdental.com. Well, last night, individuals across the New Hampshire political spectrum were shocked by the passing of Dick Hinch, who's a longtime state rep, an individual who had built up a tremendous amount of respect on both sides of the aisle as being a good person, a person that wanted to work with others, always smiling, and had an endearing personality. And he had achieved a dream of being the New Hampshire Speaker, and did that just 1 week ago, and passed away suddenly at his home last night, or yesterday, at the age of 71. And welcome to the program right now, the Senate Majority Leader, Jeb Bradley. Senator Bradley, how are you?
Obviously, very shaken by Speaker Hinch's passing, but good morning, Chris.
Good morning, and let's start there. And you know what we know about what took place. Obviously, everyone is still kind of shocked at this point in time and searching for details. And also remembering the former speaker. What have been your initial findings and takeaways?
So I don't think there are any details, and obviously I think it's really important to respect the privacy of the Hinch family. I have known Dick for a long time. He was the Merrimack town chair for me when I ran for Congress, and that's when he, you know, first was running for the House. He had been on the Merrimack Select Board prior to that, and was very instrumental in the Lions Club. So just a real, true civic leader. Then I, you know, returned to the New Hampshire Senate, and, you know, he was somebody that I think all of us could go to from the Senate to the House. I mean, obviously there has to be, you know, there's some institutional rivalry, of course, but there also has to be a lot of collaboration, regardless of, you know, whether the Speaker or the Senate President are Republicans or Democrats. I mean, you know, Speaker Hinch is the true New Hampshire public servant who understands that this is a $100 a year glorified volunteer position, and you do it because you want to do it. You do it because you, you know, want to serve your state. And that, I think, epitomizes Dick. He was a very friendly guy. He was also very humble. He was always smiling, even when he had to give you bad news. He was always smiling. And, you know, you never could take anything personally with Dick if it was bad news. I mean, obviously, as a senator, I've had my bills die in the House. That happens. But, you know, Dick was always great to work with, upfront, honest, straightforward, hardworking. You knew where you stood with Dick. But whatever you would do with Dick, he'd do it with a smile. And, you know, we did a lot of work together. You know, I remember when we were first advocating for lowering New Hampshire's business taxes, and if you recall at the time, they were among the highest in the country. And so people like Speaker Hinch and Sean Jasper, who was Speaker at the time, myself, Senator Morris, who was the Senate President, you know, we had some pretty serious negotiations with then-Governor Maggie Hassan, and, you know, we stuck to it, and we were able to get to yes. And I think that was a tribute to, you know, obviously Governor Hassan, but also people like Dick Hinch. And I think that the economy responded to the signals that, you know, we were sending. And so that's the kind of guy that, you know, Dick was. And he, you know, worked hard and just very friendly. And everybody liked him. That's why this is such a shock.
And listening to his speech from last week when he became the House Speaker, you could just tell the emotion that he had to, an honor that he had to be fulfilling that position. What do you think being Speaker meant to him?
I think it fulfilled, you know, a lifelong dream. And he would have been a great speaker, too. That's, you know, a very sad part. I mean, it's not just obtaining the gavel and all the prestige that goes with it. It's being able to, you know, effectively and fairly run a 400-member institution of people who are all volunteers. And so, you know, you've just got some really unbelievable personalities in the New Hampshire legislature. And so whoever is speaker, you know, has to be able to manage, you know, those personalities, those whims, you know, of 100 people who are volunteers who don't always see things. And I think Dick would have done a great job. And obviously he was pretty choked up. I remember, you know, it was just an unbelievable session, really, at UNH, outdoors, and, you know, the Senate met in a parking lot, and the House met on the field in front of the Whittemore Center. I think it's used for field hockey, and everybody was socially distanced and spaced out, and so the Senate came over to, you know, the House field, because we have to jointly nominate and elect both the treasurer and the secretary of state. I was one of the people that Bill Gardner asked to nominate him. And so I remember, you know, walking up from my chair, and I was seated at the back of the field up to the microphone. And there was Dick probably 200 feet away. And I said, "Thank you, Mr. Speaker." And I said, "You know, it's really a pleasure to say that to you." And I, you know, we had to leave after the nominations for Secretary of State or the vote for them and the treasurer. So I never had a chance to, you know, talk to Dick. I tried to call him a couple of days ago and wasn't able to get him. So I feel pretty bad.
Yeah. That's one of those things you always hear in these circumstances is you know, if you feel something, make sure that you know, make those, you make that final call, and that because you never know. And it's a really sad day for the state of New Hampshire. And you know, you mentioned earlier respecting the speaker's family and you know, his friends in this time. And I feel like everybody in the New Hampshire media has done a pretty good job of that so far. And I understand, as a person that conducts interviews and as a semi-journalist, you know, the who, what, where, and why of stories. But I think that stuff can wait. I think that now is the time to appreciate who Dick was as an individual, and to, you know, to tell that story. And details or whatever will come in time. But I think that during this time where it is such a shock to everybody, it's important, I think, for his story to be told. And this is a person that was a really good person and a person that was very much the epitome of what you want a public servant to be. And he went about it in the right way, and he did things for the right reasons, it would appear.
Yeah, he did. And I, as I said before, I think he was always trying to help people. Certainly, you know, the community of Merrimack, where he proudly served. I believe he first became a member of the House in 2004, perhaps. So for a long, long time. And, you know, he was very civically oriented. I think he, as I said before, he was president of the Lions Club, and I think he later became a member of the Rotary Club at Merrimack. He was a select board member, chaired that in Merrimack, and then he moved on to the House and, you know, served honorably for all those years, and really was involved in some of the bigger policy debates in, you know, that time in New Hampshire. And he did have a way of, you know, he'd let you know where you stood, but he always tried to bring people together, and he tried to get to yes. And that's a trait that you need in, you know, somebody who's in that kind of position, working with people, not holding grudges, you know, trying to understand what makes other people tick and what other people need, and, you know, how you end up collaborating to find an answer that works. And I think that was, you know, Dick's big thing. I mean, he always say he worked for the betterment of whatever it was, his town, his state, the house. So that was Dick. And he was a successful realtor also, and, you know, managed both a real estate company and, you know, his job in the New Hampshire house. So I don't think anybody can find a bad word to say about Dick. He was that well liked and respected.
That is Jeb Bradley joining us here on CRNH on KXL this hour, presented by Riverbend Community Mental Health as well as the Prescription Center. And this segment of the show brought to you by Suncook Dental. Do want to transition into a discussion of COVID-19. And we've seen horrible circumstance at the New Hampshire Veterans Home. And, you know, this brings to light, in my view, one of the major frustrations that has set in for me, in that, you know, we long knew that these long-term care facilities were going to be, you know, vulnerable during this time period. And whether it's, you know, the federal government or, you know, the state government's responsibility, do you feel that not enough has been done in order to try to ensure that people are safe within these long-term care facilities? And there's the optimal situation, which is basically like an NBA bubble, where you test every single day at a great expense to either the federal government or the state. I don't think you can expect a veterans home or a long-term care facility to foot the cost for testing every single day. But do you feel like more should have been done? The testing should be more consistent, that there should be a better flow of individuals coming and going, because it always appeared this was going to be ground zero. And to be, you know, 9 months into this and hearing about the amount of deaths in these facilities is certainly disheartening, to say the least.
Yeah, I mean, it's a tragic situation, and obviously it hasn't just been in New Hampshire. It's been around the country that long-term care facilities have been the most vulnerable. And I think that in large measure what's happened, you know, we in New Hampshire did very well through, you know, the spring, the summer, and the fall, but then people started to go indoors more. And I think you have some COVID fatigue. We're into it for, you know, 8 months now, and our lives have been, you know, totally disrupted. And then, you know, the holidays came and people wanted to, you know, see their families at Thanksgiving and things like that. And so there was more interaction of people in indoor settings. And I think that it comes with, you know, the fact that we've had spiking cases, not just in New Hampshire, but around the country, because it's harder to socially distance when you're in a indoor facility. And I think that, you know, it's unfortunate. Now, the good news is, you know, I think that what I've heard on the news is by Monday, it is likely that the first Americans are going to be vaccinated. I mean, Canadians, I think, started to get vaccinated yesterday.
Yep.
People in England on Monday. And obviously, the first people to be vaccinated will be long-term care workers, hospital workers, first responders, people that, you know, deal with the sick and frail amongst us. And then, obviously, you know, residents of long-term care facilities who are the most vulnerable. And hopefully the vaccine's effectiveness will be mirrored not only in the clinical trials, which has been unbelievably successful, but also hopefully as it gets spread into the broader population. I think the other thing that you know, needs to be noted is that therapeutic treatments have evolved, and you know, it's really been amazing what things like Regeneron have been able to do to help people recover. Now, when you're talking with about a long-term care facility, you know, it's unfortunate. These are some of the most vulnerable people, and so, you know, whether it's the veterans' home or nursing homes or any situation like that, you know, there are people there that are very frail. And so if the virus gets into that kind of situation, into that kind of facility, I mean, it has devastating consequences. But as I said before, I think, you know, certainly within the next week, we're going to see the first round of vaccines. I would hope and expect that that will, you know, have a huge impact. That all that being said, though, social distancing is still really important. And as I started out this segment with you, Chris, I think people have fatigue, if you will, from COVID and the disruption to their lives. And, you know, hopefully if we can hang on through the holidays, you know, through January, when the vaccine starts to take hold, it's going to look quite different.
And
there's still some difficult times to go.
No question. And there is such an incredible fatigue at this point in time. Like, as an example, as soon as you start talking about it, there is a fear that comes in where people are just going to, like, turn to a different channel and be like, I'm good. Let's listen to some Christmas music. That is kind of where we are at this point in time, but it is important to continue to discuss this and to continue to have it in individuals' mind and to report the news as it is. And yesterday marked the deadliest day so far for the pandemic in this country, as 3,054 Americans died of the COVID-19, and it's the first time that 3,000 American lives have been taken in a single day during the course of the pandemic. The situation is getting worse, and it is largely getting worse because of the fact that we do want to pretend that it's not taking place, and we do want to go on and to live our lives, but we have to do so with precaution. And even with the vaccination coming about, and this is tremendous news, it's important to note that you have to take two doses, and those doses have to be taken 5 to 6 weeks apart. So individuals will be getting the vaccination here in the coming week, hopefully, but are going to have to receive a second dose after that in late January or February, early February, before they are fully you know, inoculated from the virus. So help is on the way, but we can't just, you know, put our heads down and try to get to the finish line and, you know, not take precautions and continue to live our lives as we normally would. And I think that people are taking, you know, precautions. And riding around, you know, Concord last night, you know, it was pretty much a ghost town. I was doing some Christmas shopping, and I didn't see anybody out anywhere for the most part. And, you know, just, you know, 15 days out from the big day, that is certainly an acquiescence to the nature of this virus. So, yes, there may be COVID fatigue. I think that people are, you know, still engaging with other families and friends and gathering and all that. But certainly there are some precautions that are being taken. But is it enough?
Well, I think, you know, it will be very important for people, especially through the Christmas holidays, to be extra careful. It doesn't mean you shouldn't, you know, see your family. I think people should try to see their family. It's really important. We talked about Speaker Hinch before,
right,
and always wanted to have that last conversation.
But be smart about it.
No, but you have to be smart about it. That's exactly right. And, you know, wear a mask. Hygiene is vitally important. And, you know, that 6 foot distance between people, it's hard to do sometimes. But, you know, those are sort of the nuts and bolts of, you know, how to protect yourself. And this will pass, but it's, you know, it's a very tough time right now.
No question. And, you know, anecdotally and also, you know, hearing reports and watching news coverage of this, so many of the individuals who are in hospitals now or are dying now had Thanksgiving events. And there was one event that I was reading about where there were 22 individuals gathered, and the overwhelming majority of them have had COVID-19, and a couple have died as a result of that Thanksgiving gathering. So it is real. The chances of a loved one getting COVID-19 and passing obviously are not, you know, huge, but do you want to take that chance? And as I've talked about before, I have not seen my dad in months, and that's because I don't want to take that chance. But each individual gets to make their own choices. But for the betterment of you and everybody else, you know, I hope that folks make, you know, the right choices during this time period. Well, as always, appreciate joining us for the show. I know it's a very difficult day for you, and you know, I appreciate you coming on today and talking about Speaker Hinch.
Yeah, always a pleasure, and I hope that everybody keeps Speaker Hinch's family in their thoughts and prayers. Who's a just a great guy, and it's just very sad.
That is Jeb Bradley joining us here on CRNH on KXL. This hour is presented by Riverbend Community Mental Health, as well as the Prescription Center, and that segment of the show brought to you by Suncook Dental.